evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, May 3rd, 2021. The UN Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan is condemning last week's violent attack on aid workers by youths in eastern Equatorial State.
The 9 people abducted along Juba Tarkekan Road was released on 29th April. Evening hours after the government engaged the concerned authorities, including the security of the state.
And the South Sudan National Police Service is offering a reward for information on the whereabouts of suspects in last week's abduction of 9 people along the Juba Tarkekan Road.
The quick things that we are looking at them was the operation of the NGOs to start working because serving the life of people.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan is condemning last week's violent attack on aid workers carried out by youths in eastern Equatorial State. A youth leader in the state capital, Taurid, denies young men from his community, commonly known as Monyomiji, want to prevent people from other parts of the country from working in the area. Onen Walter Solomon reports for VOA from Juba.
Late last week, UN Humanitarian Coordinator Ellen Nodeher said in a statement that on April 28th, a group of young men physically assaulted staff from a UN agency and a national non-governmental organization in separate incidents in Taurid town. Nodeher says that the situation forced some aid agencies to relocate their staff to safer areas and to suspend many humanitarian activities in the state. Johnson Tereno Omojo, a leader of the Monyomiji, admits some youth assaulted one employee of the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, who hails from another part of the country.
The one of UNICEF, he was beaten outside at PLM Secretariat. Gina Sivina.
UNICEF staff was beaten outside at PLM Secretariat premises. We had a complaint that, why are you noisy? You Monyomiji, you are not educated. Like they said before, you are illiterate. That was why Monyomiji got irritated and beat him up. He ran and hid inside the Education Ministry's premises. We heard about the Health Link staff at night, at around 8 p.m. I didn't know. I am unable to tell where the problem lies, because that is not Monyomiji. If Monyomiji wants revenge, for example, on how these tribes are treating us, Monyomiji knows all their homes one by one. And we would go there quickly, but that's not the right solution. We are not happy about the incident.
Vase Willemot, a UNICEF spokesperson in South Sudan, says the children's agency is concerned about security following the attack.
This incident restricts into several incidents that have happened over the course of the recent weeks, which is a concern to us in terms of security and in terms of our capacity to deliver on programs that we want to deliver on.
Alvin Peter, an employee of the NGO Health Link South Sudan, confirms a co-worker was assaulted but declined to elaborate. The two incidents followed a petition by the Monyomiji asking NGOs operating in Taurid County to employ locals rather than people from other parts of the country. Tereno insists the aid workers would not have been assaulted if the state government and UN agencies implemented the request by the Monyomiji. He says a meeting between the Monyomiji, government officials and NGO representatives resolved that NGOs recruit 80% of locals for managerial positions and employ 100% locals for support staff. He says his group proposed that interviews of shortlisted candidates recommended by Boma and Fayam chiefs through Monyomiji be conducted at the county level.
The Monyomiji is very clear and loud. Given to the government, they wanted Monyomiji also to be in the system. That's why they give petition to the government. Mention three tribes, Acholi, Madi, and Kuku. Because Monyomiji realized the staff who are working in the organization for Monyomiji is not there in the managerial position. There is nothing called tribalism there, but the domination. The whole community, the three counties, Greater Taurid, Greater Ekoto, Greater Lopez. This community, for Monyomiji, why are you saying these people are illiterate?
under the 2017 South Sudan Labor Act, Chapter 5, Article 46, quote, any foreign employer shall give priority of employment at least 8% at different levels of management to nationals, especially where necessary skills are available. And foreign employers shall, after employment, notify and present the lists of employees to the Office of the Labor Commissioner. Closed quote. Joseph Opio is the Eastern Equatorial State Parliamentary Affairs Minister.
According to the law, it is said 80% is for the South Sudanese. It doesn't say it for any tribes. These are the middle term that we do not agree on that yet, because we have to look into the act, we have to look at the policy of the government, and we have to also convince them to understand that this is the law and this is the proposal from them.
Nudeho said in a statement, the United Nations in South Sudan acknowledged the country's serious youth unemployment problem due to the dire economic situation and stated its full support to recruitment practices that are based on competence, professionalism, integrity, and respect for diversity. He also noted that people's humanitarian needs will deepen if aid workers, many of them South Sudanese, are not able to safely resume their activities. He called on authorities to provide safety and security for aid workers and to quickly bring perpetrators of attacks on aid workers to justice. Opio says the issue has been resolved and state officials are hoping aid agencies resume operations in the area.
The quick things that we are looking at them was the operation of the NGOs to start working, because serving the life of people. So we agree with them, and it was announced on the state radio, the NGOs has to go back to their normal working place. Mwanyamiji, the representative, agreed that they will not go for violence. So any individual which is caught doing violence will be responsible.
This is not the first time that local youth have assaulted aid workers who hail from other communities. On April 24th, aid workers were attacked in Jamjang of the Roeng administrative area. For VOA News, I am Onen Walter Solomon in Juba.
The South Sudan National Police Service is offering a 2 million South Sudanese pound reward to anyone providing credible information about the whereabouts of five people identified as prime suspects in last week's abduction of nine people along the Juba-Terkeka Road. A police spokesperson says the police are also tracing the bank accounts to which the abductees' relatives paid ransoms. David Monadanga has more for VOA from Juba.
On Tuesday last week, nine people were abducted along the Juba-Terkeka Road. Shortly afterward, the abductors demanded 5 million South Sudanese pounds for the release of each individual. Central Equatorial State Information Minister Paulina Lokodu says all nine were released unharmed around Jebel Ladu Payam on Thursday after their relatives paid ransom. He says a suspect has been arrested and is in police custody in Juba.
The nine people abducted along Juba-Terkeka Road was released on 29th April. Evening hours after the government engaged the concerned authorities, including the security of the state and the people who abducted these innocent civilians along this road. One person also was arrested related to what prompted the abduction of these civilians along this road.
Lukudu says the government used an engagement strategy to make sure the abductees were released unharmed, while later tracking down the kidnappers.
They are working on it to ensure that these people are arrested. You know, this information is more of security. And to engage these people also, the way to be handled it in a smart way. That cannot cross, also create panic among the communities at the same time, cannot allow the suspect to run away from the country.
On Sunday, the South Sudan National Police Service published photographs of five people suspected to having connections to several recent abductions along the Juba-Terkeka Road, Juba Ye Road, the Juba Kajokeji Road, and Maridi Roads. Colonel James Dak Carlo, deputy spokesperson of the National Police Service, says the criminals likely include foreign nationals.
This group are organized bandits. They terrified people. Sometimes you get arrested, you have to pay a ransom so that you are released. If not, sometimes it will lead to killing and burning cars. According to the intelligence source we received, they gave us about nine names. And out of nine names, two are Ugandans.
Carlos says anyone with information leading to the whereabouts of Samuel Gatwech, Chan Riek Pit Dwar, Gatdwell Gatchong Kwang Lual, and Gaiman Kon Kwal Chelini should immediately contact police.
The government has given us an assurance that whoever can give information that lead to arrest of these people, he will be rewarded with $2 million. And also he will be protected, his life will be protected from danger. So we are still now tracking and we have exposed this to the public.
Police published photos of five suspects on the official police page, as well as in three daily South Sudanese newspapers, the Number One Citizen, the Juba Monitor, and the Dawn newspaper. Carlos says the suspects identified in the photographs are wanted for questioning only at this point and may not be responsible for the attacks.
Some information sometimes are not accurate, but it is actually a mistake of fact, not a mistake of law. Because we receive it, but we have no intention. So it's legally, in the legal language, according to the Sudan, Southern Sudan Gazette 206 Law of Evidence, that there is information, they say mistake of facts and mistake of law.
Carlos says some people may be wrongly accused due to their strong resemblance to the real criminals or because of inaccurate information given to police officers. He reiterates that everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
In Cameroon, the Center for Advocacy in Gender Equality and Action for Development has launched a project to strengthen the grassroots participation of women in peace and security through community awareness training. It's part of the center's efforts to help resolve the ongoing conflict in the mainly English-speaking parts of the country. Separatists in western Cameroon are fighting for independence from the central government, which has been led for decades by French speakers. The center's training aims to empower women to effectively participate in the prevention, management, and resolution of conflict. Human rights groups say the violence between Anglophone rebels and the military has left over 3,000 people dead and over a million displaced from their homes. Clotilda Andienza is the CEO of the center, which is based in Bamenda. She tells VOA's Peter Clotty that project participants are being trained to improve their communication skills and learning how to maintain neutrality in conflict resolution.
We are presently actually training community peace ambassadors who are intervening in their local communities with this particular instrument. We have trained already 30, that is 10 men and 20 women, and we have certified them and handed over a community handbook, which is a simplified version of the international instrument, because we've made it in a way that they can easily use it and adapt it to their communities.
What are some of the activities that you take these young women through to help equip them regarding capacity building to help them be effective in their communities where the conflict is still raging?
We provide them with basic needs. We provide a training on psychological, and we offer also psychosocial support. We also improve their skills on communication and improve their knowledge on the principle of neutrality. We also help them to be better ambassadors of peace and nothing but peace, because we provide them with knowledge on international instruments like what we have just done on Resolution 1325. We are giving them a handbook, which is a tool that they are going down to use. We have certified them. They have a certificate that supports their work in the communities. And we continuously monitor and provide assistance to them as they carry out this work in their various communities.
With the training that these young men and women are undergoing, how effective do you think they will be in helping to end the conflict?
With this training, we expect both of them to be able to mainstream what they have learned, taking into account and into consideration how the conflict is affecting both genders. We are very happy because the male trainees in particular have had the opportunity to understand what the women go through, and also to see how they can effectively collaborate to see that this happened. It is the same thing with the women. They are also happy that for once they have the opportunity to speak out with people in a kind of a level ground who are now understanding their challenges. We understand that out there, the people who are at the forefront of the crisis or the conflict are also both men and women. So having these trainees going down there as mediation activists, they are meeting their kind. And it's but normal that when a man talks to a man and a woman talks to a woman and both of them mix, it gives us exactly what we want.
How does the organization monitor the progress of these trained men and women? What are some of the mechanisms implemented in order to be effective in monitoring their progress in helping to stop this conflict?
One of the strategies that we are maintaining on ground is the formation of peace clubs. So each of these community peace ambassadors is going back to form a peace club in his or her community that will constitute at least 10 members. In this club, they will be able to pass on the lessons that we have impacted on them at this level. Talking about how we intend to follow up these clubs, we have a harmonized action plan which each club will adopt. One other strategy we are also adopting is that we are already in a one big WhatsApp group where we actually communicate on a daily basis. So at any moment, we know what is happening in any local community and we can advise accordingly. They are connected in this WhatsApp group and they are sharing their work, their success stories, as well as their challenges, and getting feedback and support from each other.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, we look at new variants of COVID-19 in Uganda. Find out more after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
in which way are you most like your parents?
In my physical appearance, I'm most like my dad. I do not really look like my mom. She talks a lot, but I also don't like talking.
I look very much like my dad, and I speak like him too. But as for my mother, I don't resemble her at all, but I love her anyway.
I'm like my dad when it comes to giving orders, like leading. And then when it comes to my mom, I'm like her when it comes to cooking, because she has good cooking skills.
Like my character. People say I'm like my parents when it comes to character. Like the way I behave, the way I socialize, it's just like the way my parents do.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Africa is the most dangerous place globally for journalists to execute their duties, according to this year's World Freedom Index. The report says 33 journalists have been killed in Africa in the last 4 years while on duty. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, the East Africa region has been a hostile environment for journalists recently.
According to the report by Reporters Without Borders, the year 2020 was the most dangerous year for African journalists, as some were killed on assignment while others were killed in custody. Others were harassed while working, arrested or affected by COVID-19. In East Africa, journalists in Kenya, Uganda and Tanzania have found it rough either from the government, police officers or members of the public who have made their work difficult. On Saturday, May 1st, a Dutch-well German citizen journalist based in East Africa, Marielle Müller, was attacked and seriously injured by police officers while covering demonstrations in Nairobi, Kenya.
So what happened was that my colleague, John, and I, we were covering the protest. It really looked like a targeted attack. They knew or they saw us doing the interview there. I'm definitely seeing the Kenyan police with different eyes now, from now on. But generally, I have to say, I feel quite safe reporting from Kenya. Compared to other East African countries, it's still very safe.
The Press Freedom Day is celebrated to remind governments of the need to respect their commitment to press freedom. A Ugandan journalist, Teddy Nakalinga, working for Spark TV Uganda, was attacked last week by the police and her tools destroyed.
I was taking videos of this incident, but as I was doing this, there came a group of four soldiers dressed in military uniforms and started beating me terribly. I tried to ask them, "What wrong have I done to beat me like this?" And one of them replied, "We don't care. Who are you to ask?" They took my camera from me, broke it.
Maxence Melo is a Tanzanian journalist and human rights defender based in Dar es Salaam. Melo says the government of Tanzania has been against journalists and that he is optimistic the changes might be felt with the current regime.
I'm a victim of the past administration. We are optimistic that government spokesperson issued a statement just today saying that they want to support the journalists. At least there is this kind of willingness from the state.
This year's World Press Freedom Day theme is Information as a Public Good. Head of Media Development and Strategy at the Media Council of Kenya, Victor Bwire, said that the press freedom in East Africa has really dropped and journalists are finding it difficult to execute their duties.
Press violations in the three countries, you see a huge increase in the number of journalists undergoing threats, harassment, number of media houses closed down, laws that had been put in place like the computer and cybercrime unit and the rest were all very constrictive.
According to the report by Reporters Without Borders, press freedom remains highly fragile in sub-Saharan Africa as journalists continue to lose their lives and the killers generally go unpunished. At least 102 journalists have been killed in the continent over the past 10 years. I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
Uganda's Minister of Health reports that it is recording new variants of the coronavirus. The variants detected by researchers include the COVID-19 variant from India, which prompted the country to suspend all flights from India. The Indian community in Uganda has welcomed the move of prioritizing public safety. Halima Uthmani reports from Kampala.
Effective May 1st at midnight, no flights from India shall be allowed into Uganda. The new directive follows the Ministry of Health researchers detecting one case of the coronavirus disease, an Indian variant, in the East African country. India has so far recorded more than 18.8 million COVID-19 cases, with deaths soaring to upwards of 200,000 in the past week, with new infection cases surpassing the 400,000 mark. Dr. Jen Ruth Acheng, Uganda's Minister for Health, outlined the travel restrictions.
All passenger flights between Uganda and India are suspended until further notice. No travelers from India shall be allowed into Uganda, regardless of the route of travel.
Acheng also stressed that all travelers who may have been in India or traveled through India in the last 14 days or about 2 weeks, regardless of route taken, shall not be allowed into Uganda. She says Uganda has so far recorded 399 cases out of the five variants circulating in Uganda. Other variants identified include variants from Nigeria, the United Kingdom, and South Africa.
The variants currently circulating include the following: the Indian variant, the South African variant, the Nigerian variant, the United Kingdom variant, and the Ugandan variant.
The Ugandan variant that is now reported in 34 countries has registered 135 cases, 15 cases of the South African variant, 15 of the United Kingdom variants, 13 cases of the Nigerian variant, and one case of the Indian variant currently being treated at Uganda's Mulago National Referral Hospital. Minister Cheng says, even though the epidemiological distribution and impact of these variants in Uganda is currently unknown, they continue to study the progression. Mohan Rao is the head of the Indian Association in Uganda, a community-led organization. He says even though the cancellation of flights is going to affect trade and other engagements, the association welcomes the move. Rao says they have written to the Ministry of Health seeking permission to carry out a sensitization drive among the Indian community.
You see, some people will feel shy or agree I have corona. You know, you need to come out openly. Yes, I have this. I'm isolating myself. For me, what I wanted to sensitize, corona is not a big disease. It is only just stay around and take a timely treatment. You have to take it. Then you will come out with the flying colors.
He has been sending text messages to members of the community and also wants to have community meetings. These are allowed in Uganda as long as people wear masks and social distance with a limit of 200 people at a time. Back in March, India was one of the countries that donated 100,000 doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine to Uganda as it kicked off distributing vaccination among frontline workers, such as healthcare professionals and other service providers. In an address to the country in March, President Yoweri Museveni noted it was becoming riskier for a country like Uganda to depend on external vaccine support to curb the spread of COVID-19.
Because like India now has got a very big rise in the cases. They are in a very big crisis. They are struggling to solve their own problems. And here we are waiting also in line to get support from them. This is not correct.
Since March 2020, Uganda has recorded 41,866 COVID cases and 342 deaths. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
We love to hear what you think about this show. Send us your brief comments about issues in our news or happening in your area. Our WhatsApp number is +12023608011. We will air your comments every Friday. And that's our show for this Monday. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap. Practice social distancing, wear a mask when in public places, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for COVID-19. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America.
Lisa, Pisanula, the good morning to you. Kalam Tobo, he looks so what do you do? Kalam Tobo, he looks so what do you do? Bishesh, Tia, Fimashima, Minulza, you, Yajama, Shikimanda, Tatu, the leader of the Nia, Sibunta, Kuyamana, and Alba, Kakosi.
I am a man. Farida hiya ben banada min zogu afunono. Farida hiya ben sitada min zogu afunono. Aziza hiya wakiyafa sununululu. Aziza hiya wakiyafa sununululu. Farida min salam to anal biga faristu. Farida min salam to anal biga mazlulu. Leo, Miss Papa, Hadana, Mamma, we still do your dama. She came on the hat.
Sibuta kunjamana, analba.